Welcome in, everyone, to the Batfoot Podcast. My name is Damien with Matt and David. I hope we have the internet fixed. I hope you can see this because last week you could not, and that was completely my fault. But we are back. Matt does not have his face cam today, but you finally get to see David's face because this is the first time you'll have that on these episodes. But this episode, we're going to talk about the National League West outlook for 2024. We'll talk about the Dylan Cease trade. We'll talk about some big time injuries and injury information that we've had come out over the past week or so. But before we get into all that, Matt, how are you doing on this wonderful getting ready to start March Madness?
Doing good. March Madness is a big deal for me right now. I was at the SEC tournament this weekend in Nashville, and that was a lot of fun. If you're a college basketball fan, go into a tournament like that, regardless of which conference it is, it's a lot of fun to go see all the different teams play, all the fan bases combined, especially, you know, Nashville's a really fun city. So that was a blast. And my team ended up winning the tournament, so that was also awesome. And I am a little bit tired today. I actually took a couple hours off work this morning because I was still tired from getting in late last night. But yeah, it's super fun, and March Madness is awesome. And March Madness also means that it's get close to the end of March, which means baseball's here. We've got games this week, so I'm super excited for that, even though I don't really – neither one of them are my team. But and it's also so early in the morning, I'm probably not going to be able to watch it very much. But that I think they start at – first pitch is at like 5:30 on Wednesday morning Central Time, which is where I am. So – poor day. Yeah, it's gonna be rough. I guess Damien, you're gonna be, it's what, 3:30?
Yep.
Oh boy, that's well, sorry.
The way would be to take off Thursday and Friday, right? And then you just, you know, kill your sleep schedule. Watch some baseball.
The way is I've already took off Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
There you go. Yep. And then you get to watch basketball on Thursday. Yep. Baseball at night.
Get it all out. It's a little early morning.
Sure. I was joking before the show with Damien. I said all three of our teams are in it. So
for once, right?
All right.
Clemson. I'm not. I didn't pick them. I did not.
Yeah.
Didn't pick Clemson.
Yeah, I did not pick Auburn because they got shafted in their bracket, being next to UConn, and I don't think anybody's beat UConn. So.
Well, David, how are you doing?
I'm good. I love bracket season. I don't watch a whole lot of college basketball, but I love getting into like the brackets and the picking and stuff. And I've been doing that since I was a kid with my dad, so it's always got a special place in my heart. And you know, love making the brackets. That's always fun. And you know, spring training. You know, I haven't been able to watch a whole lot of games. We don't have Marquee right now, so I got to figure out a way to get my Cubs games on there. But you know, paying attention to everything, all the injuries and stuff. We had our fantasy draft this weekend. That was really fun too. So, you know, I've had it's a good sports week, and you know, it's always exciting to have the tournament coming. So, especially right next to opening day, it always reminds you opening day coming. So, I'm ready. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We had like you said, our draft. We had March. Great NASCAR Cup Series race.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend, which was perfect. And then obviously, I mean, the Dodgers are in Korea, so we've had the, you know, I've got to see a couple of their games already. Feels like it's truly, you know, actually opening day for me. They've started wearing the whites again, even though MLB completely botched the Dodgers white uniforms this year. It just feels different when they wear those white uniforms compared to the blue ones. It's just always how it is. So, that's been a lot of fun just seeing, you know, the culture and then that and how the game is taken over there. It's been really fun to see, but can't wait. Two more days. Like I said, I'll be up at 3 a.m. watching those games. But anyways, let's jump into everything that we got going because it's going to be a long episode and we've already rambled for way too long. So we're going to start off talking about the Dylan Cease trade to the Padres from the White Sox. But in the first half, we're basically going to look more at it from the White Sox perspective. We'll talk about Cease, his impact, and what that means for the Padres and everything when we get to the NL West breakdown and get to the Padres there. So this is a move that's been widely speculated for, 2 years now? Or, you know, at least a year and a half, going on 2 years. So it actually happened, what was that, Wednesday? Tuesday. Last Tuesday, it was Dylan Cease going to the Padres for a package of Drew Thorpe, who they just acquired from the Yankees this year for Juan Soto, Jairo Iriarte, outfield prospect Samuel Zavala, and then relief pitcher Steven Wilson. So I know we have a little bit of mixed bag here of how, you know, how we view the package and everything, but let's start with Matt. What did you think of the package for Cease here and the overall haul the White Sox got after this whole like 2 years of waiting?
I think it's okay. I think that for one thing, I really do think Dylan Cease is a really good pitcher. There's some things that are issues with him. You know, I think the walks are a little bit of a problem. You know, he honestly reminds me a little bit of Blake Snell, who the Padres just had a lot of success with last year, in the way that he, you know, he walks a lot of guys, but he gets a lot of swing and miss. And his ERA is usually pretty good. You know, he put up a 4.4 WAR season in 2022 and was what, runner up for Cy Young. So, you know, this was a very valuable piece for the White Sox. He's this year and next year of control, but it was obvious that the White Sox needed to trade him because, you know, he's ARB eligible next year. He's already making $8 million this year, and he's not signing an extension. He's just not going to sign one. I think he's a Boris client. He's said he's not signing an extension. So he's not going to be a part of another winning White Sox team. They're not going to win this year, and they're not going to win next year. So it made a lot of sense to trade him and go ahead and trade him, because with the nature of pitchers, you know, it's, you know, pitchers get injured. And if he pitches for the first half of the season, there's a chance that you might lose all your value you have in him. And they did get value back. Drew Thorpe is a guy that I'm not super high on him. I think he's all right. I think he's kind of that mid rotation type guy. He's got a really good changeup. He throws a lot of strikes. The fastball's kind of iffy. He seems to me like a high floor, like middle of the rotation guy. I don't think he's got like ace upside, but you know, I think he's a pretty valuable piece. He's major league ready as well. I think the biggest disagreement we're going to have is on Jairo Iriarte, who I like him, because he throws really, really hard and he has good stuff, but I'm a little worried about him just in the way that he has a high effort delivery and he's, you know, he's really skinny. Like, he's listed on Fangraphs at 6'2", 160, and he's probably a little more than 160 now, but he's one of those real slight built guys. And he's just, you know, there's a lot of reliever risk with him. In fact, last year in Double A, he was a reliever half the season. He has some control issues. You know, he's a high upside guy for sure, but it's definitely something where it's almost like like when we had the DL Hall trade with the Orioles and the and trading him in the Corbin Burns trade. That's who Jairo Iriarte reminds me of. It's him, or maybe even Matt Brash of the Mariners. Like, it's that type of prospect to me. And then Samuel Zavala has had good numbers in low A, and he's really, really young, and that's the big thing for him. Is he's you know, he's 18 years old. He's gonna be 19 years old this season, but he runs a really high strikeout rate, and there's a lot of question marks about how his swing's gonna translate to the upper minors. So with his youth, he could definitely be somebody that makes adjustments, but you know, it's just kind of a question mark with him and with his, you know, high strikeout rates. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. And the Steven Wilson, I mean, he's a good flyer to take as a fourth piece in this trade. I mean, he's got pretty good stuff, throws pretty hard. He's got a lot of control left. He could be a solid reliever and for the White Sox. So, you know, I was thinking that, you know, the Corbin Burns deal, I felt like, you know, the Brewers got a top 50 position player prospect and a pretty good pitching prospect that was similar to Iriarte. And, you know, Dylan Cease has 2 years of control, so where Corbin Burns had one. So I felt like the value should be a little bit higher for Dylan Cease, especially with the fact that they were holding him so long, waiting for a better trade offer. So I was surprised that this ended up being the trade. But I think these are guys that the White Sox could definitely use and could definitely help them. And, you know, it's still a no-brainer for the White Sox to move him. So it was interesting. I think they maybe could have gotten a little bit more, but, you know, we're close to the season starting. Dylan Cease has looked good this spring. His value is as high as it's going to be. Go ahead and move him now. So I'm not totally opposed to it.
Yeah, I mean the White Sox end in this trade is interesting because Zavala, Thor, and Thorpe and Iriarte all have had sprinkling of top 100 list presence, you know, as with some prospect pedigree, where you know, some of those guys like Spencer Jones are pretty, you know, divided on the way they are, and that was kind of the hang up top point when in the talks with the Yankees was, you know, are they going to trade Spencer Jones for Cease or not? You know, Jones is one of those big guys, kind of judge like big power, big strikeouts. But you know, Zavala is a young 18-year-old kid. Sky's the limit. Floor is, you know, in the basement, right? So much variance on what Samuel Zavala can be still. Iriarte's Matt hit it on the head. Matt Brash, DL Hall, that's the kind of range for Iriarte. I think he's a really interesting little prospect. He ran a 40% strikeout rate last year in Double A, which is it's monstrous. But they were also dealing with the ball changing. So how much of that was Iriarte's discomfort with the ball, and how much of that is truly a control problem? A lot of Double A numbers last year are a little screwed up from that still. And then I have a theory on the Drew Thorpe thing, and I'll let you guys clash back on me on it. But I think the Padres acquired Drew Thorpe thinking he was the best available, like one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. They got him in the building, coming off a 1.48 ERA at Double A, right? He had some of the best minor league numbers last year in terms of ERA, in terms of, you know, strikeouts and control, and the stuff just wasn't as good as they thought it was because of the numbers last year. And then they found a willingness to move him because Drew Thorpe was maybe like the number one or number two piece in the Juan Soto trade. So moving Drew Thorpe is crazy to me. You know, we were talking about this. I thought it was going to be either Lesko or Thorpe, but I was leaning Lesko, the high school draft pick from a couple years ago, who's kind of nasty, but he's had elbow problems. And so he's been on the kind of back end of the top 100 lists. He's got some upside, but he's not a difficult ask. And Drew Thorpe was like the guy they traded Juan Soto for. So that's weird for me, but it tells me that I think the Padres overestimated what Drew Thorpe was in trading him from the Yankees. You know, that's what I'm going with. I mean, you guys can clap back on that, but yeah, from the White Sox perspective, this is a good package. It's not what I thought it was going
Yeah, you make a good point about Drew Thorpe, and you know the one thing you're talking about, Dylan Lesko. I don't know if he was. I don't know if the Padres were willing to let him go in this trade, but you know if it was kind of an either or, I don't understand picking Drew Thorpe over him if you're the White Sox, because you know you're looking at your time frame for the White Sox and you're looking at like probably 3 or 4 years before you can become good again. I mean, it's the farm system is still not great. It's gotten better over the last year with all the trades they've made and everything, but it's still not great. You know, you're going to be picking high in the draft for a couple years in a row. You can rebuild. You've still got some pieces that could be traded. I mean, you look at like you know, you look at Eloy Jimenez and Yoan Moncada and some of these guys that, you know, they could have a good half season and get you something back for them. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be great, but you know, you could get something back and add to your farm. And it's just the timeline of having a major league ready guy who you're going to start the time clock on this year. You know, once you get to that 3 or 4 years from now, you're in contention window. Well, he's going to be in the same spot Dylan Cease is in now, if he's successful. So it's one of those things where, I mean, maybe he will sign an extension, you know, at some point. But it's one of those things where you're kind of, you know, you have to really like him if to draft him on this timeline or bring him in on this timeline. And same can kind of be said for the Steven Wilson, although I think that's more of just kind of a throw-in piece. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, it was an interesting move. You know, we'll see how it pays off for the White Sox. And I do think it's a move that reeks of desperation for AJ Preller, but we'll get to the Padre side of it when we do the breakdown here in a little bit.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid package. I would have much rather them traded Lesko, because I think Lesko is going to be a stud. I have him on my dynasty team, but I really did not want him to be on the Padres.
Wouldn't want him on the White Sox either.
Well, my thing is hopefully he's traded back by then by that point. But
Yeah.
you know, I really like Zavala. I mean, obviously I think he's the big piece here. Can he fulfill the potential of what you imagine he can be? Because if he fulfills what you would expect, and a guy like Iriarte, who's a, you know, potential starter or like could be a dominant, you know, late inning reliever, becomes the third piece in this deal, and you get a everyday outfielder and then, you know, a three in your rotation and then a, you know, good reliever, then you look differently on this trade. It doesn't have the star power, which we were all thinking it was going to have at the beginning of the offseason. You know, when they asked what the Reds for, like, Rhett Lauder and Chase Petty and something else, like, it's not that type of deal, but it's an overall solid haul. And like Matt said, I think this is the thing of, like, AJ Preller, really, like, we have to make a swing right now because, you know, we see what the Dodgers did. The Giants have signed Chapman. They're, you know, maybe in on the Snell market here. You know, our pitching staff is, doesn't have the depth, but if we get another, that, you know, big time starter at the top of that rotation, maybe that helps there. Like, it just seems like it was a desperation move from this side. And then it seems like Chris Getz was like, also, hey, I don't want to go into the season with this guy with the potential for injury here. And it's 2 years. Let's do it. So let's turn our focus over to the injury concerns that we've had happen. There's two big ones we're going to talk about, but just to mention some of the other ones that we'll talk about more here with the predictions episode coming up. You know, guys like Trevor Stephan, Gavin Williams, what else we got? Danny Jansen, TJ Friedel. What else we hear? Yuri Perez is a big one that's going for an MRI. Jose Urquidy has a forearm strain, is going to be on the IL. And then we got a trio today from the Twins, you know, all-star closer, Johan Duran is going to be out, Caleb Dielbar and Anthony DeSclafani. Those are just to name the ones that have come out in the last week, you know, or few days about potentially starting the season on the IL or for sure starting the season there. But the two big ones, we hinted at the Garrett Cole one last week. He was going to go get some, you know, an MRI, go talk to doctors. We're going to see what it was going to be. Well, it ended up being some nerve inflammation and edema in his elbow. He's going to be shut down from throwing, I think, for 4 weeks is what they said. And it's going to take about another 4 to 6 weeks for a ramp up there. So you're talking about, you know, a 2 month to, you know, maybe 3 months, depending on if any setbacks, absence for Garrett Cole here for the Yankees, which is a massive, massive deal.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we could just make this kind of a Yankee segment too, because they've also got two, you know, their superstar position player has been messed up with some, like, abdominal issues. Yeah. You know, Judge. And Aaron Judge has missed a lot of time. It sounds like he's not going on the IL, so we won't talk about that too much, but it's definitely concerning for a guy who, you know, his forte has been that when he's healthy, he's maybe the best player in the game, but he's struggled to stay healthy consistently for his career. And, you know, and then you got DJ LeMahieu, who's also got a pretty severe bone bruise or something, so he could miss some time. So a lot of injuries for the Yankees, with the big one being Cole. I mean, that's tough for them. That's one of the most irreplaceable pitchers in baseball, not just because he's good. Although I think he might, you know, if he had pitched all year, I don't think he was going to repeat his year he had last year. There were some signs in his peripherals and stuff that he could be falling off a little bit, but like, the guy pitches, he's pitched 200 innings like 3 or 4 years in a row. He's durable. He's kind of that typical, like, just prototype pitcher that you don't see quite as much of anymore, that prototype ace, where, you know, you feel like he's going to be durable. Like, he looks durable. His mechanics are clean, and it stinks to see him get hurt. He's so irreplaceable, pitches so many innings for them. And, you know, you look at their rotation now, and you've got major question marks about Carlos Rodon, who looked great today in his spring training start, but, you know, he's had a little bit of an up and down spring. I think he has started to get a little bit better as the spring's gone on. And then you got, you know, Nestor Cortez, who's kind of low upside, but he's had a lot of injuries the last couple of years. And Marcus Stroman, who, well, same thing as Nestor Cortez a little bit. I mean, he's got a little bit of upside, but he's not like super high upside, and he's had a lot of injuries as well. So it's one of those things where, you know, the Yankees rotation for a team that looks right now like it's trying to be, I mean, this is their all-in year. They traded for Juan Soto. They mortgaged a lot of future pieces for him. You know, this is an all-in year for the Yankees, and you know, they're really going to need this. They're really going to need to hold their head above water while Cole is out. Hopefully, he comes back in a timely manner. But, you know, also with even if it is a, you know, a nerve issue and not anything that appears to be super serious at the time, like long-term serious, you never know with elbows. You just never do, and you never know with shoulders. So I would not be shocked if in a couple months you come back and it says Gerrit Cole's had a setback. He's going back to the surgeon and getting an MRI, and they're trying to figure out what's wrong. I mean, it happens with pitchers. I hope that's not the case. I really think that it probably isn't in this case, but it's tough for the Yankees, and there's not really a ton they can do about it too, because their luxury tax situation, they are the highest payroll in baseball right now, and they're up against that last tax. So if you go try to sign, Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell to replace him, you're not paying $20 million, $25 million for him this year. You're paying $50 million, and I don't think they think Blake Snell's a $50 million pitcher. So, that's a big deal right now for the Yankees, and we'll see what happens. They're gonna have to figure something out.
Gerrit Cole's last 6 seasons, 5 seasons, 5.8% walk rate, 6.3% walk rate, 5.6% walk rate, 5.9% walk rate, 5.9% walk rate. The guy is the same pitcher year in and year out. If that elbow is hurt, and you don't have the same pitcher that you've had for, pretty much since 2015, he's had a few years where he's been a little bit different. But I mean, he's pretty much been the same pitcher since around 2015 or 2017, whenever he left the Pirates. And he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball since that time frame. This is a big loss for the Yankees.
Yeah, no, it's massive. I mean, imagine if the Yankees had some starting pitching depth right now. If
Yeah, they would be okay, right? Yeah.
five or six people weren't traded in one trade. But it's pure question marks. I mean, that's what it is. Is Nestor Cortez going to bounce back? Is Carlos Rodon going to stay healthy? What is Marcus Stroman going to look like? Like, their whole rotation right now is just filled with question marks. And then now you add that Gerrit Cole on top of that, and you're talking about a team that, hey, we should be competing for the division. We're one of the best teams in baseball if Cole is healthy. And now it's like, well, what's this pitching staff like? What's that going to look like here? Are we going to be able to? I mean, they have a good offense if everyone's healthy, which not everyone's healthy on that side. But I mean, that pitching staff in that yard, it's going to be hard to keep other teams from scoring a lot of runs against you right now. So they have to hope that they get like A plus outcomes out of every scenario that is question marks right now,
And
to even have a chance.
that's a team that won 82-80 last year, and they
Yeah.
added Juan Soto, but then they subtract Gerrit Cole. That's the same team,
Yeah. Subtracted a Cy Young Award winner, yeah.
like Gerrit Cole might have even been arguably more valuable than Juan Soto last year.
I will say that you also add, hopefully, even though it's kind of started off sketchy, a healthy season from Aaron Judge and a healthy season from Anthony Rizzo and a healthier
He's
and
healthy.
better season from Giancarlo Stanton, who looks really good in the spring. And you added Alex Verdugo. I mean, they added a lot of pieces, and then they had all that injury mess last year too. So, it is. I do think they'll perform better, but yeah, I agree. Like, you're an all. It's an all-in year, and they're not even probably the pick in their division.
Yeah, right now we're looking at their starting rotation of Nestor Cortez, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, Clark Schmidt, and Clayton Beter. That's the rotation.
There's a scenario where that rotation's still elite. I mean, what if Rodon is 2022 Carlos Rodon?
If that's the big thing here.
Exactly, right,
Another
exactly.
huge
Like, there's
if.
a world where like the ceiling is there. Like, that's
Oh,
kind of what
yeah.
I'm saying. The ceiling is
Every
there. It's
single,
just,
like I said, they need A plus outcomes for every single one of those ifs here.
yeah.
That's what they need. So let's jump over to the other injury that we had happen, and that was Devin Williams, kind of out of nowhere, announced that he has stress fractures in his back in the T12 thoracic vertebrae, which is, we usually hear about the L1, L2, L3, lumbar regions. This one is right about the bottom of the rib cage area. He says that this even could stem back from last September. He felt some stiffness in his back then, and he pitched through it, just thinking that it was normal, late in the season type stuff. And I think in his two spring training outings this time, I think ending in the third, he gave up 4 runs or something, just didn't look good. And then they went and found this out. So he's going to be out at least 3 months, which if back fractures, they can take even longer to heal. But it sounds like at least 6 weeks before he picks up a baseball again, and then we see where he's at from there. But you're looking until around the All-Star break for you know, the Brewers all-star closer there, who's supposed to be a massive piece of what they want to do. Again, David, I know this one also impacts you.
Yeah, imagine both having both of those guys on your fantasy baseball team, right? You know, but the thing, this is, I would argue this is a less impactful injury to the team that it's around. Obviously, Devin Williams, an all-star, phenomenal closer, right? The airbender, right? He's got one of the best, if not the best, changeup in baseball right now. You know, and just see, you know, a guy like that get hurt is, it stinks for any baseball fan who doesn't get to, you know, see a pitching ninja video of Devin Williams throwing this year. But if there's a team set to weather injuries in their bullpen, it is the Milwaukee Brewers. We talked about them last week, me and Matt did. They have Abner Uribe, they have Joel Payamps, they have you know, a bunch of these, like Jacob Mizorowski and some of those other young guys. There's one more young guy they have, Gasser, a guy named Gasser. Of course, he probably throws gas, right? So they got a bunch of guys who can step into this role and kind of slide everything down and allow Payamps to probably take over that closer's job. And I mean, I might just give it to Uribe and see if he, you know, takes it and runs in stride with it. And you know, it's not Craig Counsell there anymore, obviously, but it's Pat Murphy. Pat Murphy's been there. He knows all their guys. And, you know, he's the bench coach last year. I think Pat Murphy's going to, you know, kind of closer by committee, run, figure out who's going to run with this job. They have a lot of good arms in the bullpen. I'm not worried about the Brewers bullpen. It stinks for Devin Williams, though, and obviously Devin Williams fantasy owners all around the world, including myself, because he's been a very reliable piece since Josh Hader moved on. And yeah, I mean, it stinks, but I think the Brewers are just going to next man up and be okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. I think the Brewers are very good at developing relievers, finding your relievers off the scrap pile that end up, you know, they figure out something with them. They're kind of like the Rays in that regard. And you know, the guy with the best projected ERA in the bullpen is Trevor McGill too. So that's another guy in there that, you know, is projected to do really well. But you know, and one other thing, you've got a couple of like major league ready ish pitching prospects in Gasser and Mizorowski. And you also still got Aaron Ashby there, who has been, you know, part of a big league rotation at times. And you've got DL Hall in your rotation right now, and there's a pretty good chance that DL Hall ends up being a reliever. I mean, there really is, and if he doesn't start off red hot in their rotation, that's another closer option for them, because this stuff will play up in the bullpen and he will be a back end reliever. He's a little bit like Josh Hader to me, where it's just like he maybe could start, but reliever, and he's placed to the Brewers now, traded from the Orioles to the Brewers is another part of that. Like I think that could end up being an option too, but yeah, I mean, it stinks. You know, the Brewers are a team that, while we do mention that they have the bullpen depth to weather something like this, they're kind of a fringe contender. So any little thing they lose around the margins is a big deal. And this isn't really losing around the margins, even though they do have a really good bullpen still. Like it's a big loss for them, and could cost, you know, if it costs them two games this year where, you know, Abner Uribe comes in and struggles with his command as the closer, then you've got that might lock him out of contention. I mean, they're right on the edge of it. So we'll see what happens. And hopefully Devin Williams can come back later this season. Back injuries are weird. There's things that you can't, it's hard to get surgery for that. You know, it's kind of just rest and recover. And that can just go at different rates. He might come back fully 100% healthy in 3 months, and it might take all year. Who knows? It's one of those mystery injuries. So hopefully, you know, hopefully he's able to get healthy and we'll see what happens. I definitely think it's, you know, it's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big one, and it's something where come next week when we make our predictions episode, this might factor in where we put the Brewers. I mean, you know, it could easily slide them down between first to second or second to third. I mean, wherever we have, each person has them, not having somebody who's a lockdown back end guy like Devin Williams might cost you those couple games. And in this division where it's going to be so close, that could very well be the deciding factor there for the first 3 months. So, you know, there's always the saying of like, oh, well, these games are in April, they don't matter. Well, in a division like this, like, it's going to matter. Like, every game does. So it'll be something to watch for sure. But As we hit about 30 minutes into this episode, let's finally jump to the outlook for the National League West. And let's go to the Rockies, who last year finished 59-103, 41 games back in the division. Matt and I were talking before the show, before David, you got in here even. I think we kind of had a consensus here where the Rockies might be the worst team in baseball.
I'd agree with that. They certainly have a case for it. Aria, do you agree? I got my cat came to join the podcast, so she's here. She's got an opinion. I think I agree. I think the Rockies are pretty terrible.
Yeah. Let's just real quick. We've been highlighting, free agent moves for each team here. Their moves for so far have been signing Jacob Stallings, Cal Quantrill, and Dakota Hudson have been their big signings there. Their 2024 projections here have all of them. The lowest ERA is a 5.29 of Ryan Feltner. By the projection system. It is Colorado, so it is a little skewed, but still, I don't think that any of those guys would have a 4 ERA.
Even if it's
else.
A one-run difference, it's still a bad rotation. But this team's bad. It's been built poorly. I mean, they've signed bizarre free agent contracts, a.k.a. Chris Bryant, to a gigantic deal when they were obviously not going to be in contention for multiple years when they signed it. And, it's just – I don't understand them. They have made a few good pickups at times, like Nolan Jones. They got for nothing, and he's done really well. I mean, and we'll see if they can get healthy this year too. I mean, you've had Chris Bryant obviously missing so much time. He's playing first base now, so maybe that'll help him be healthy. Brendan Rodgers has missed a lot of time. Hopefully, he can get healthy. And their infield defense might be pretty good with Tovar and McMahon. And I think Chris Bryant, if he's healthy, could do well at first base. Brendan Rodgers is not great at second, but he's fine. And then you've got Brent Doyle, who might be the best defensive center fielder in baseball, so their defense might be exciting. But, that rotation is terrible. The one positive thing about their rotation is that it's a heavy ground balls with these guys. You look at, Dakota Hudson, that's really his only skill is he gets a lot of ground balls. Austin Gomber, I believe, gets a lot of ground balls. Kyle Freeland gets a lot of ground balls. So that is something. The only way to even have a chance of building any kind of pitching in Colorado is get guys who get ground balls. But they don't have good pitchers that get ground balls. So that's kind of a problem. Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, this team stinks. They don't have a lot of talent. Their farm system is not, it's probably not the worst in baseball, but it's not good. They've got a couple good, good prospects, but they're not many of them. I think they might have two or three top 100 guys total. And one of them's a pitcher who, since he's playing in Colorado, is not going to be a top 100 very long.
Yeah.
So it's tough. I mean, it really is. And maybe they can get some trade value back for some guys. I think that, you might be able to trade. I wonder if they would be able to move a Ryan McMahon or they won't because they're the Rockies. But
yeah, I was saying
I was going to say, they would be smart to move a couple of these guys, but they won't do it because they're the Rockies and they just don't operate that way. So I feel bad for the fans there because they do have really good support in Colorado. Their attendance is usually pretty good for a team that's a perennial loser. So I wish they would have a good team. Rocktober back 20 years ago when they had that one good year was awesome. So, we'll see. Maybe they can figure it out one day. But as of now, it's just a really, really tough situation. And, I don't see it improving very, very soon. So it's tough.
I'll give you my couple of guys that I really like on this Rockies team because there's not very many. And I do want to note that's Austin Gomber, the trade return for Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
I long for the day that my team will trade Austin Gomber for Nolan Arenado because that's the thing that happened. Straight up, that's what happened. A ridiculous trade. Anyway, the Rockies are terrible.
While also giving the other team money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just an obscene deal. Why can't that happen to my team?
They got another big leaguer in the trade, Elias Montero.
Yeah, Elias Montero is also there. He's not very good either. It's that was a disaster, and I hate it. I do feel bad for Charlie Blackman, right? Coming up on the kind of the twilight of his career, maybe looking to retire here in the next couple of years. That's a guy who's been really good for a long time. And, you know, he's not on a winning team, and he's been dedicated to Colorado for his whole career. And, you know, and that's going to kind of cost him, I think, in terms of like ring chasing. He'll never win one.
Well, it also, I mean, it's hard to feel bad for him since he signed an extension there like 2 years ago. I mean, Trout. It's hard to feel bad for Trout and the Angels because he signed the extension there. He could have waited till free agency and gone somewhere else.
Yeah, but I mean, he obviously likes it there, right?
Yeah, but exactly. Like, you know.
Hey, you know.
There is something that you said about loyalty, though.
Oh, yeah. I love players that want to re-sign with teams and not ring chase. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. Yeah. But
Hence why I have some fondness in my heart for Charlie Blackman. But,
oh, yeah.
The other guy, you know, Nolan Jones is obviously a really exciting player. Went 2020 last year, maybe the quietest 2020 season of all time, given the excess in stolen bases and then the Rockies' irrelevance. But he's an exciting one, and I think you know, he'll have an equivalent season next year, right? He's a guy that, you know, you're gonna pick up in your fantasy league. He's an exciting player. Keep an eye on him, and maybe the Rockies decide to, you know, move a guy at the peak of his value. That'd be weird. They probably won't do that, but maybe.
I wouldn't do that with Nolan Jones, but I mean, he's only got 1 year of service time, so
that's the peak of his value. They might actually get something for him. But
like, there is a scenario where 5 years from now, while he's still under control, they try to build a win. They, you know, they have a winning window. I mean,
this team, possible. Yeah, look, I like Justin Lawrence. He's going to be in their bullpen. Throws a sidearm like 99. He's a fun guy. This rotation wouldn't look near as bad if German Marquez was, you know, in it and not out with Tommy John surgery. But so I've always said it, you know, liked German Marquez.
Yeah,
I was always like, what if he wasn't pitching in Colorado? He might be good. Unfortunately, he's been in Colorado his whole career. And I'm really excited about Adiel Amador. I think that guy's going to be a really good shortstop for him. He might go to second base, but they might just move Tovar to second. So, you know, we'll see how they handle that situation, because I think Amador will come up this year.
Maybe Tovar's really good defensively, shortstop, right. So they might not.
Depends on how Tovar Rogers hits in year. What was this, year two? Because Rogers can just go to the outfield, and one of them will play shortstop, one of them will play second. Maybe. Might be the Nico Horner situation with Colorado, where they slide the better defensive shortstop over, and just, you know, plug in the better hitter in the shortstop spot.
Maybe. So let's jump over to the San Francisco Giants now, who finished 79-83 last year, 21 games back in this division. They've been a pretty active team in free agency so far. They signed Jung Ho Lee. They've signed Jorge Soler. They've signed Matt Chapman. They signed Jordan Hicks to that deal and are converting him to a starter. You know, traded for Robbie Ray, you know, as well. So they're an interesting team. I think, to me, you're still looking at a little bit of starting pitching depth concerns. I mean, you know, Alex Cobb's going to be out to start the season most likely. Ray's not coming back till mid-year. You know, like Keaton Wynn, Mason Black, and Jordan Hicks are in your rotation, with Kyle Harrison's your two. There has been some rumors and some smoke about them potentially still being in a Blake Snell market. We don't know what's going to happen there, but Matt, overall, what do you think about the Giants, what their offseason has looked like, and do they have a chance to really, you know, make up, what's that, 21 games on these other three teams ahead of them?
I think their offseason's been pretty good. I think they've done enough to at least be a wild card contender. You know, Jung Ho Lee was a pretty cool signing for them. He was a really highly touted player out of Korea. They got him on, I think, of what, 5 years, 100? Was that what it was?
Six for 113.
Six for 113. So that's not too bad of a contract. And if he ends up hitting at his upside that people have seen in him, that could be a steal of a contract. You look at, you know, they've got some pretty solid pieces. This is a team that has like six or eight good players, but they don't really have a star. Like, Tyro Estrada is a pretty good player. He's a great defender at second base, and he's an okay hitter. But he's, you know, he's probably a 2-3 win player. Like, Lamont Wade is a pretty good hitter. He doesn't do a lot defensively. He gets on base a lot, but the power's a little bit limited. He's just kind of a 2-win player. Jorge Soler is a DH who has a lot of power, but, you know, he's not a great on base guy. You know, he's a fine DH. You know, like, Matt Chapman's a fine third baseman. He's probably a little bit better than some of these guys, but, you know, you could probably pencil him for 3-4 wins. So You know, but they don't have that superstar. They've been trying desperately to get that guy. Like they've tried. They tried for, you know, they tried for Bryce Harper 5 years ago. Couldn't get him. They tried for Ohtani. Couldn't get him. They tried for, who was it last?
Judge,
Correa.
Correa,
Correa and
Judge was a big
Judge.
one. And Judge. And I mean, they've tried for so many star
And
players, and
they
haven't been
thought
able
they
to get
had
one.
both of those
And
guys.
they definitely
They
thought they
had
had.
Korea.
They had Correa.
They
They
thought they
thought
had
yeah.
Judge.
Yeah, they thought they had Judge, and they
Aaron
didn't really.
Judge.
But they did have Correa.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the big question that I think the team's going to be okay. They're going to be maybe above average offensively. Like they'll be fine. And I think that defensively, there's some, you know, concerns about the middle infield, you know, and definitely the corner outfields. Like, you know, Michael Conforto and Mike Yastrzemski being in the outfield, and then Jung-Hoo Lee is a very young center fielder, and he hadn't played a lot at the big league level. It'll be interesting to see how his defense translates, but you know, their defense isn't great, but it's okay. Their hitting is, their bats are, you know, they're fine. The bullpen is probably the strength of this team. You got Camilo Duvall as an elite closer. Both of the Rogers brothers are still really good. Tyler Rogers, the sidearmer, had a really good year last year. You know, you've got you know, you still got, like, Luke Jackson could be a good reliever at times. The big question mark for these guys is the starting pitching. And, you know, like Damian said, Blake Snell could change that a little bit, but Logan Webb is an ace, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's been very consistent. You know, Kyle Harrison's very interesting. He's a little bit of a risky prospect, but he looked pretty good in the big leagues last year. His stuff is incredible. If he can keep improving on that command, he could be up there in a high end in a rotation. And you just got to get your injured guys. You got to weather the storm until you can get Alex Cobb back and hopefully Robbie Ray back. You know, Robbie Ray coming off of Tommy John surgery, the timeline on that's always a little bit, you know, sketchy. But Alex Cobb sounds like it's ahead of schedule, and his was a hip issue, so it's not something that's, you know, affecting his arm. So if you can get those guys back, and maybe add, you know, you could end up with a pretty good team here. They're not going to challenge the Dodgers, I don't think, but they're going to be right in that mix between with. I think they're going to be real similar to the Padres. There's holes on this roster, but they've still got some good players, and they've got some upside, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. One little note here, and then I'll pass it over to David, is Patrick Bailey has the craziest defensive projection I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, he's projected for 27 plus 27 defensive value on
Yeah.
Fangraphs. It's insane.
Insane.
Like his it's and it's a mix of framing and pop time and
Hey.
arm and everything. Like, he is incredible defensively, and I do think there might be a little bit more in the bat than he's shown, but he had pretty good numbers in the minor leagues with the bat. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. But this team, you know, they'll probably be all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Logan Webb truther, I would say. You know, I think Logan Webb's one of those guys that gets underappreciated on the national stage. But Matt spoke truth, right? This rotation is a question mark behind Webb and Harrison. I don't think Wisenhunt is ready to help yet. He would be their second best starting pitching prospect. And then you're counting on Jordan Hicks for a long, you know, for starting pitching. I don't believe in that at all. I've been pretty vocal that that's not a good move. You know, they're gonna have Wilmer Flores in there. I think he's maybe the one guy that Matt didn't mention in the projected lineup. This team looks a lot different if it had Carlos Correa, man. That deal falling through, you know, them not getting over the leg thing, it's changed the trajectory of this organization drastically, right? I mean, if you're penciling in Carlos Correa third in the lineup, shortstop every day, or as many days as he can play, with Marco Luciano potentially coming into third base, you don't need Matt Chapman, right? Luciano's probably, you know, your third baseman going forward. He's a big guy. Like, now you're counting on Luciano to learn shortstop. The trajectory of this group is not the same as it was. They've got a bunch of DHs, it seems like. They traded Mitch Haniger away to get Robbie Ray back. Very funky offseason. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I'll go ahead and, my predictions, this isn't going to be a playoff team. Blake Snell's not going to make this a playoff team. They just are. They're going to get beaten down by the Dodgers. They're going to get beaten down by the Padres. We're going to look at three more teams here that are all better teams. And, you know, this Giants team, they're trying everything. But missing Judge, missing Correa a couple of seasons ago, it's just, it's haunting them. It's going to keep haunting them until they can finally land one of those stars.
I guarantee this is a team that takes like half the game from the Dodgers. It's just the way it happens. It's just the way it happens. And objectively, if you look at it, this might be a better roster than their 2021 season when they won 101 games out of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, baseball is a weird game. And we all have those teams, right? Like, we all have them. David, it's the Cardinals for you. They just, there's Cardinals, Devils, Magic. Listen, there is Giants, Devils, Magic. When you least expect it, they find a way to be good. I mean, yeah. Just look at, what was it, that run in the early, you know, like the 2010s, where they made the World Series in all the even years, and then like all the odd years, like missed the playoffs. Like, it's something really, I mean, they made it obviously in the even years for there, but like, they're a team that just varies so much, right?
Yeah.
They will find a way to be scrappy and to get some stuff. They almost finished 500 last year. I mean, what, they were three games away from that, or two games away? Two games away. And this is a much better team. Like, I do see an area where they can be a fringe wild card contender, but they're still the best fourth player, or they're the fourth place team in this division, in my opinion. Like, you still have the three teams ahead. The Padres, Diamondbacks, and Dodgers are still better. But I would not be surprised if this team then somehow finds a way to win 100 games either. They just find a way every year.
It's weird.
Go ahead, David.
No, yeah, it's weird. Like, I agree with Damian. Baseball's weird. This team could totally prove me wrong and win 95 games. Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that this is one of those teams, there's a few of them out there that are, it's just good enough to where you're like, they're close enough to where if things break their way, they could do it. But you're probably not expecting them to.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, I'll ask y'all just kind of real quick, what y'all think, but the Giants' last 30 home run hitter was Barry Bonds, which is crazy. You mentioned they've won three World Series since they've had a 30 home run hitter. But do y'all think that they're going to have a 30 home run hitter this year? They've got, because they added Jorge Soler and they added Matt Chapman, who's got a good bit of power. You know, if he makes a little more contact, maybe. Do y'all think they're going to have 30 home run hitter this year?
I love Jorge Soler to death. No.
I say yes.
Think Jorge's going to do it?
No. It'll be like Mike Yastrzemski or something.
Oh, yeah.
Damian situation.
I think it's either Soler or it's Chapman. Yeah. Chapman only hit 17 last year, but he was a guy who was a fringe 30 home run every single year until they made the changes at Rogers Center, and he's been very vocal about how those hurt him.
Yeah, and was in a similar ballpark to AT&T, where he hit those home runs too in Oakland.
Yeah, and the thing to me is, like, obviously you're going to play in AT&T Oracle. I still call it AT&T as well.
Yeah, I know. I just made the mistake.
You know, you're going to play a lot of games there, but you're going to play games in Dodger Stadium where it's becoming a very homer-friendly ballpark for right-handed hitters especially. You're going to play in Coors. You're going to play in San Diego, which is a very good right-handed hitter homer ballpark as well. Arizona, the ball travels. Like, they're going to play enough in this team, and these guys are still really powerful. One of them, I think, is going to do it. I really do think so. But let's jump up to the Padres. We talked about them a little bit in the opening segment of the show, but they finished 82-80 last year, 18 games back in this division. You know, they've lost Josh Hader. They've lost Blake Snell. They lost Seth Lugo. They've lost Michael Wacha, Gary Sanchez. I mean, Juan Soto, Nick Martinez. I mean,
delete a little.
You can let, I'm just reading off the Fangraphs list here. You know, they've lost so many players, but they, I mean, you know, they went and they traded for, we just talked about Dylan Cease here. You know, they traded for Michael King and that package there. They used a lot of money on that bullpen, signing Wu Sook Oh, Yuki Matsui. They've had an interesting offseason here. You know, their outfield is where the question marks has been. It looks like their top prospect, Jackson Merrill, is supposed to be the opening day center fielder there, which is a massive thing. You know, Tatis has turned into a platinum glove winner in right field. Bogart's moving to second base. Team with a ton of question marks here, but still a lot of talent. 18 games back in this division. Do we still feel like they're, you know, a wild card contender? Can they compete for this division? I mean, what are we looking at here at the Padres with the, I mean, an ebb and flow offseason for sure, David?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team, you know, that has a lot. Damian went over the whole summary of the offseason there, right? They've lost a lot. But they lost a lot from a place of, we were calling them World Series contenders last year before it all went wrong, right? I mean, they had what they never won a game in extra innings last year. They had a horrible one-run game record, right? This was a group, and that was with Josh Hader. This was a group that simply didn't perform well in the, like, on the margins in those close scenarios, and they fired the manager. They hired, they fired Bob Melvin. He's with the Giants now. Another reason I don't know that I love the Giants. You know, and they're going to, you know, go out here and, you know, they've added Dylan Cease. Michael King is interesting, at least in that starting rotation. He was really good down the stretch for the Yankees last year. And the bullpen is completely revamped. Doesn't have that only the one guy is good vibe to it anymore. There's a lot of different options in the bullpen, I think. You know, the lineup feels maybe a little bit deeper, but it doesn't have that impact at the top. But then at the same time, that lineup last year was like a murderer's row like lineup, and now it's not that good anymore. But at the very least this time now, you've got, you know, Jackson Merrill's going to be hitting in that nine spot. Maybe he comes out and pops off and does well. But you're still got Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, Ha-Seong Kim, who was really good last year. Like, it's a decent little team. It's not going to beat the Dodgers, right? We're getting to that. It's not a Dodgers beater, but I think this is a team that can definitely contend for the wild card. You know, the big question is going to be whether, I guess, third base gets solved, right? With Machado out, you know, is he going to be able to, you know, get back to the field soon? And then, you know, if Machado steps back at third base, who's DHing for this group? Do they have anybody that, you know, is Tyler Wade their DH? Like, yeah, they're missing a few pieces. Like, maybe they should go out there and sign JD Martinez, who's still sitting out there in free agency. You know, I think Brandon Belt might still be sitting out there in free agency too. Like, they need another bat. I think Tommy Pham is rumored to be coming to the Padres here at some point, which would help. You know, they're a bat short, at least from like fielding a major league roster and a major league lineup. And that's kind of the biggest hole, I think, because the rotation looks kind of good now. It's pretty good. Darvish, Musgrove, Cease, Michael King, that's a solid foursome.
Yeah, I'm not very high on this team at all. I think that I honestly think the Giants might be better. You know, you've got ruby red flags last year in the profiles of Bogaerts and Machado, who are two super highly paid players, and Machado's not able to play third base right now. It sounds like he will not be able to play third base at opening day and early in the season. He's going to be a DH. So you've got some guy named Graham Pauly that's listed in depth charts, and you got some guy named E-Guy Rosario, who is, you know,
he was there last year.
He's potentially going to be getting time at third base. And this team has like no, you've got Bogart. I think Tatis is going to have an excellent season. He came back last year. He was awesome last year. He transitioned perfectly to right field. He's going to have an awesome season, but assuming that he's not on the roids again and gets in trouble. But
he's taking care of a tapeworm.
Yeah, sure. It's not hard to not do steroids, but Xander Bogaerts, I mean, it's bewildering to me that they would move him off a shortstop after he had his best defensive season of his career. Like, it just makes no sense. Weird. Like, especially when you've just, you basically, like, they made it a point that he was going to be their shortstop for the future too when they signed him. Like, that was a point. Like, he is a shortstop. And then 1 year, after his best defensive season, they move him off. You got Ha-Seong Kim's a really good player. He's a good defender. He's good at shortstop. He's fine. He's, you know, he's solid. I don't think he's going to hit like he did last year. I think he's going to be a really solid player still, even though it looks like he's having a great time in Korea with the home runs he's hit already. He hit two this morning, which is pretty cool being back in his home country and hitting the home runs. But you've got Jake Cronenworth playing first base. Like,
big question.
I mean, he was bad last year, and even at his peak as a bat, it's not really a first base profile. I mean, you still – I mean, if he's playing a really good second base, with the bat that he's shown in the past, then it's really good. But at first base, if you put up a 115 WRC plus, you're maybe average, like below, probably below average for a first baseman. So, and the lineup's just got no depth. I mean, once you get below Manny Machado, who, like I said, he's also had some red flags in his peripherals over the last couple of years. He had the fantastic season in 2022, numbers-wise, almost won the MVP, but he had took a step back last year. He'll probably still be good. What's up?
We're have Batflip podcast breaking news in the middle of the show. John Heyman just tweeted Blake Snell to the Giants, 2 years, $62 million with an opt out.
Well, there you go.
We just all talked right. about it.
They might win. They might win. They might be back ahead. It might be a little better. They did that on purpose. They were listening to the show.
Yeah.
Did that on purpose, right?
But yeah, I think, I mean, is that the first time we've ever had actual breaking news during the episode? I think that's a first.
Maybe.
Breaking news like that. We've had like the comeback grand slam from Nelson Velasquez and stuff like that. But I mean, actual breaking news with the free agent signing while we're talking about that at team. That time. That is big. So we'll talk more about that probably next week once we get more of the details there. But what we were just saying with Snell to the Giants.
Moving on a little bit further with the Padres here. I mean, they've got, Campusano's a question mark. They have Jurickson and Profar in left field, who last year was one of the worst hitters in baseball while playing in Coors. And then Jackson Merrill had a 104 WRC plus in AA last year. And I don't think that that's an indictment of him as a prospect, but that means he's probably not ready for the big leagues in the following season. And this reeks of AJ Preller desperation, just like the Dylan Cease trade did, because he did the same thing with CJ Abrams and maybe ruined CJ Abrams when he called him up way before he needed to be in the big leagues. So because he needed him and he needed somebody to play the shortstop. So Jackson Merrill, he needed somebody to play center field. He's learning a new position with having played 40 so-so games at AA, and now he's now he's your opening day third center fielder. Like it's just to me this lineup is just not deep. Your stars have question marks about it, even though I think they'll probably be fine with the stars. And then you look at the rotation, and I mean I think Joe Musgrove's going to be solid. Dylan Cease I think is going to be solid. You know, Yu Darvish is probably going to be solid. He's 38 years old, so you just never know when that might affect somebody. I think Yu Darvish is a guy that's aged pretty well, and I don't think the age is – I think that he's taken good enough care of himself to where he's doing well at 38 years old. I don't see a huge drop-off from him. But, you know, he's not an ace anymore. He's a really good pitcher, but he's not an ace anymore. And, you know, it's hard to say what to expect from Michael King and Johnny Brito. I mean, Michael King's a converted reliever who's shown some really good flashes as a starter, and we'll see if he's able to continue it. I will say that the Padres did a great job doing the same thing with Lugo last year, where they took him from being a reliever to being a starter. They liked his stuff as a starter, and he did well for them. So Michael King might be a similar situation to that. And then, like David said, the bullpen is probably improved as a whole. You lost your back end guy. I think they could have trouble closing out games in the ninth inning, but there's some upside here. I think it's going to be a big key with Yuki Matsui. If he is the flame-throwing lefty as advertised, or at least that his potential has been advertised as, then you probably really upgraded your bullpen. If he's not, you've got a bunch of fine names here, and you might struggle in the back end. So there's just so many question marks about this roster, and this is where I just, for the Padres, I don't agree with the Dylan Cease trade, just because you're throwing three pretty good prospects at a 2 year window of a roster that's not good. So what are you doing? Like, you need to keep those prospects. You're going to have aging stars on big contracts. You're going to need cheap, good players here in about 2 or 3 years. And now you're getting rid of potential cheap good players in 2 or 3 years for going all in on a season that is not going to be good. So, you know, it reeks of AJ Preller desperation. Like I said, I mean, he's done this so many times. He's so good at building up a farm system, and then he just throws it away, and it seems to never work out for him. So we'll see if he's able to work out this time. But it'll be it's going to be a challenge for this roster to get to the playoffs. And like I said a minute ago, before Blake Snell signing, I said the Giants were better, and I definitely think the Giants are better now.
Yeah, so the thing with Jackson Merrill is they were going to let him come in and have an opportunity to win a job in camp, and he's looked absolutely fantastic. He's hitting 351, 400 on base, almost 600 slugging, 163 WRC plus. He's earned a shot at this. Yeah. Now, you can question the move to center field. I think that's a very, very real question mark. You know, he more likely profiles as a left fielder, but give him a shot out there. I'm surprised they didn't just move Tatis to center, because that was what their plan was last year anyways, until they figured not to do that. So that part is interesting. You know, what they really should do on the infield is they should move Cronenworth to second and keep Bogarts at short, move Kim to third, and then either sign a first baseman or say, hey, Manny, go play first.
He can catch. Reorganizing this team makes it better. It's like, why are they doing it this way right now?
Yeah, you can sign a first baseman. You know, somebody, I mean, we've talked about some of the options that are out there that you can easily go get or on the trade market. You can get somebody very, very simple for that. Tommy Pham coming back makes a ton of sense for a team like this. You know, he can fit into the left field there, and you can, you know, put Profar to your bench and have him as a bench guy, which he's probably profiles better as anyways. It does give you some pause. I mean, their rotation is really good though, especially with Cease now. I mean, Matt Waldron was really good last year. He's been really good in spring training so far as well. You still have the potential of a guy like Randy Vasquez and Adrian Morejon if they can ever figure it out. You know, they brought back Luis Patino, who's really, really, really rough, but it was a super high rated prospect at one time.
Only 24.
He's only 24, but he's had a rough go of it. He went to the White Sox, the Rays. Where else did he go? Or was just Rays and the White Sox?
I think it was Rays, yeah. But he was bad with the Rays. It's hard to be bad with the Rays.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe they you know, were able to find something there, but it's way this lineup is, really.
Was he the return for Blake Snell?
Yeah.
One of them.
Yeah, he was part of it, yeah. Which is kind of a funny thing, but
it's all for a circle.
Yeah,
it's all full circle there. It's just the way this lineup is, and they have star power. They do have star power that can help carry this lineup. It's going to be the depth of the lineup that is going to be the question marks here. And if they do get a couple other fringe guys like a Tommy Pham, and then go out and get a fringe for, you know, somebody who can play first here and there, if they did want to do, you know, the reorganizing of the infield there, if Manny's not able to come back, you don't force him back in that aspect to have to play third. You would feel a lot better about this. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it is a team that's going to be either really high or it's going to be really low. And they're going to have to see what it's going to turn out like. But let's jump over to the Arizona Diamondbacks now, who finished 84-78, 16 games back of the Dodgers last year. You know, their big move was re-signing Lourdes Gurriel. They've signed Jock Peterson. They signed Eduardo Rodriguez. You know, really not. They did bring in Randall Grichuk as well. Traded for Eugenio Suarez.
That's the one.
I mean, this is a team that they went out and they've upgraded in other aspects where they needed to. You know, the pitching rotation was a question mark last year, even though they made it to the World Series. They go get Eduardo Rodriguez. They had Evan Longoria playing third base with them last year. They traded for Eugenio Suarez, who was really struggling in Seattle. You know, they brought in Jock Peterson to be a left-handed bat there, you know, to fill that at DH. The one thing that does give you some pause here is still the depth of their lineup and the depth of their rotation. I mean, this is still a team that's looking at Brandon Pfaadt and Ryan Nelson and Dre Jameson Jay Jameson got Tommy John. Sorry, I forgot about that. It's going to be Brandon Pfaadt and Ryan Nelson picking up, you know, a big part of these innings here. So, Matt, what do you think about the Diamondbacks offseason and where they're standing at in the division?
I think this is definitely the second best team in this division. I like their roster. I mean, it starts with Corbin Carroll. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to repeat what he did as a rookie. I think he's awesome. He might even be better than that. You know, Ketel Marte is a really good player. Gabriel Moreno showed why he had been a top prospect for so long and really did well as a rookie. I think he will improve some. He seemed to get better as the year went on. And you got really solid depth players here too. Christian Walker's an awesome first baseman. Lourdes Gurriel is a really solid left field option as a hitter. Jock Peterson as a platoon guy is awesome to be a left-handed platoon guy. I don't know who he'll platoon with. That might be a question mark. But I think that like I'm not high on Eugenio Suarez, but he's a big leaguer. I mean, last year you had Emmanuel Rivera and the ghost of Evan Longoria playing third base, and now you've got a big leaguer or a current, So, and then Alec Thomas is an awesome defender who has some upside with the bat. And even then, your last guy in your lineup is Geraldo Perdomo, who was an all-star last year as a shortstop. So, I mean,
Could be
this
Jordan
lineup,
Lawler.
and it could be Jordan Lawler sometime
Should
this
be.
year too. Like, he's a very high-rated prospect. So you've got an awesome lineup. It's deep. It's got upside. It's got stars in there. Maybe not a ton of superstars, but it's got one superstar, and it's got a bunch of other guys who are stars. And then the rotation's good. Zach Gallen is one of the better pitchers in baseball. Merrill Kelly is a really solid pitcher, and he was unbelievable at down the stretch last year in the postseason. He was awesome. Eduardo Rodriguez is a veteran left-handed pitcher. I do not think he is as good as he pitched last year. I think he beat up on a bad AL Central some and had outperformed his peripheral some, but I think he's a good pitcher. And putting him in there for depth, like last year, you started the season. I think Madison Bumgarner was their third starter last year to start the season. This year, it's Eduardo Rodriguez, who is just monstrously better than that. And then Brandon Pfaadt really seemed to figure it out at the end of last season. And he has always had that prospect upside of a guy that could be really, really good. So, and I don't know what to think of their five starter situation. It's just okay, I guess. Ryan Nelson could be fine. I don't know. But the bullpen is still similar guys. You've got Sewald, who was a good addition to them. Kevin Ginkle is awesome. You've got some of the other guys, Joe Mantiply, Saul Frank, Thompson. It's the same crew that really did well in the postseason last year. And some of them had good regular seasons. Some of them, there might be a little bit of question mark on if it was a little bit of a flash of the pan in the postseason. But definitely a team that's been well constructed. They've built through their farm system. They've graduated prospects. If you look at how many homegrown players they have, guys they've developed, it's a bunch of them in their lineup. And they've got more coming too. Jordan Lawler, like Damian said, I mean, that guy is awesome. Like you've got some other guys in there too, I think. I guess not quite as many as they had, before this year, but they're a very interesting, they're a very interesting team. And like I say, I just don't think they're I don't think they have quite the star power to match up with the Dodgers, but
Yeah.
they're kind of, they could win 90 games. I mean, I'll put it that way.
They match up with the Dodgers in a short sample, right? But this isn't going to be a group that challenges for the division. They got better, right? But they didn't gain to the point that you're going, oh no, here come the Diamondbacks, right? Like, in the Dodgers, obviously, got the best players available in the offseason. Like, yes, they are miles and leagues ahead of the Diamondbacks, but Diamondbacks are the ones who went to the World Series last year, right? This is a group that is pretty much effectively the same with a few key additions. I gotta say, I really liked Eugenio Suarez, getting him out of Seattle. I think that's a guy who was hurt by the backdrop in Seattle. They have a backdrop that hitters have complained about. And some of them hit well in Seattle. Like Julio Rodriguez has found, he's found comfort in that backdrop. But Eugenio Suarez switched there from Cincinnati, and he did not find comfort in that thing. And last year he was struggling there, but he also had his best defensive season at third base of his entire career last year, which tells me that as he's growing more comfortable as a veteran in Major League Baseball, he played 162 games and he had his best defensive season. Like, if you can get him somewhere where he's comfortable, which maybe that's Arizona, maybe not, but he was a guy that I was targeting as a potential, underdog type acquisition that could really step up next year with, he's a guy who hit 49 home runs in 2019. He's got big power. Maybe you wind up getting one of those really crazy late career resurgences from a guy like Eugenio Suarez because he played good defense at third base last year. So, at the very least, they've got a quality defender that's going to hit some home runs. that's not what they had last year, right? Evan Longoria was older and, you know, wasn't really hitting quite the same level, but I'm a Eugenio Suarez truther on that front. And, you know, the rest of the lineup is as Matt said, and, you know, Zach Gallen is an ace, right? He maybe was one of the Cy Young favorites in the NL. He'll be the Cy Young favorite again. You know, there's, you know, I like the Eduardo Rodriguez signing. I think the depth of this group is a little questionable, but that's what you use, you know, use what you try to trade for and stuff. So they've got, you know, pieces for that. Tommy Troy is a top 100 prospect. They drafted at, I think, 11 or 12 last year from Stanford. Looks really good. Should be probably a trade piece. I think if you're being honest, he'll be moved, and he's the kind of guy who will get you a solid 3 or 4 starter, like at the deadline. And, you know, they can make that Jordan Montgomery type trade the Rangers made last year that really solidifies everything and move forward if they need to. So they got the ammo, they got the starting group. This is a playoff type team, you know, and there's, I think, 4 or 5 of these, you know, wild card-y playoff type teams in this NL. So that battle for that last wild card spot that we saw last year, I think, is going to get repeated. I don't think the Diamondbacks are in that group, though. I think the Diamondbacks will elevate themselves up there, and it'll be Phillies, Diamondbacks, and then there's going to be a scrum for that third wild card spot.
That's what I was about to say, that the Diamondbacks, to me, are very similar to the Phillies, where they have a two-man, like, a two-headed monster at the top of their rotation, and they've got a lineup that has a couple of stars and pretty decent depth, although there's, you know, it's not perfect, and then their bullpen is pretty good. But they're in a division with one of the best teams in baseball, and they're probably going to struggle to win the division. But this is a really good team, so I feel really good about them right now as a wild card team, and I feel real similarly about them as I do to the Phillies.
Yeah. So Eugenio Suarez being your 6 or 7 hitter, playing good defense, hitting 30 homers, you know, 30-ish homers right around there. That's just what a team like this needs. You know, you talked about who the platoon guy for Jock Peterson is going to be. It should be Randall Grichuk. He had an ankle bone spurs removed in January, but he should be back relatively soon there. And I think by the time the All-Star break comes around, Jordan Lawler will be playing shortstop every day for this team. Like, he should be the shortstop right now. He's really, really good. They gave him a little bit of run last year, but I mean, it's your first cup of coffee in the major leagues. Nobody expects you to figure it out right then. And they were a team fighting for the division, or not the division, but the wild card spot there. They couldn't give him more time. I mean, he has nothing left to prove in the minor leagues. I just think that they just don't want him sitting on the bench and playing every day at the moment. And the moment Geraldo Perdomo struggles, I think Jordan Lawler comes up and takes that job and runs with it. And that'll be another big upgrade to this team. But let's move over to the Dodgers. I mean, they're the class of this division for, what, 10 of the last 11 years. They finished 162 last year, and I think they had a pretty quiet offseason. They didn't really do much here. They just, you know, they just happened to shine Shohei Ohtani for $700 million, you know, and then they followed that up by making sure that they brought back Jason Hayward on a 1-year, $9 million deal.
That's the
and then they
one.
Were like, that's not good enough. Let's just go trade for Tyler Glass now and give him a 5-year extension. And then they were like, well, that's not good enough either. So let's just go give Yoshinobu Yamamoto $325 million over 12 years. Let's make sure we bring Clayton Kershaw back, which is the most important part of this whole equation. And then let's go re-sign Ryan Brazier and Joe Kelly and just...
Forgot about the most important one. Teoscar Hernandez.
Oh, yeah. Teoscar Hernandez. you know, this... I mean, Kike Hernandez. I mean, they've just done a bunch here in this offseason, obviously. It was all joking there. But, you know, they do have... There are still question marks around this team. I mean, as money as it says, like we're at the point where now Mookie Betts is going to have to be the everyday shortstop because Gavin Lux wasn't getting it done. What's Mookie Betts going to look like every day at shortstop defensively? What's Gavin
Probably
Lux?
Great.
Maybe, but you never, you don't know. I mean, you just don't know.
It's going to take Mookie some time at least.
Yeah.
He hasn't looked comfortable at all in the games he's played this spring. So
he's been given a week
Right, week exactly. And a half. That's what I'm saying. Like, he could get comfortable. He's a good enough athlete to do it. It's just, it's going to be a work in progress.
They trained for a shortstop before they threw Mookie Betts out there uncomfortable. There's plenty of time here.
Well, yeah, there's that. And I think part of it, too, they still do have Miguel Rojas, where, like, if it doesn't work out, Mookie can go to second, and you still could play Rojas at short. Like, I think they're trying to give Gavin Lux time to get his legs under him and maybe potentially try that again. He was really good in his short sample in, what was it, 2021, I think it was. I think it was when they lost Seager. It was 2021, and they had to anyways, I forget exactly, but he looked good defensively there before he tore his ACL. He was supposed to be the shortstop last year. And I just think he needs more time there. You know, it really comes down to what this pitching staff is going to look like right now. You have Kershaw out for, you know, at least until August. Bueller's going to be out for a while, too. They lost Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. They're going to be out for most of the season, if not the full season as well. Emmett Sheehan, who was supposed to be the lock to be the fifth starter, has shoulder soreness. You know, right now the four is Glasnow, Yamamoto, Miller, Stone. Paxton will be in there at some point. He's dealing with some knee issues as well, a little bit here and there. But I mean, obviously this team is the class of the division. They've spent loads of money. They should be the best team in baseball. But now they have to back it up here.
I mean, this is a team that last year was sending out, you know, duct tape and straw at the pitching rotation, and they still didn't allow that many runs, and they still scored the second most runs of anybody and had a 200 run differential. To me, it doesn't matter. This is a group that is so ahead of their time in terms of game planning, strategizing, you know, roster construction. It could put anybody up. And I'd say, oh, yeah, they'll just have a 3 ERA, right? I mean, the bullpen last year for the Dodgers was obscene. They pulled a 1 ERA out of, like, Ryan Brazier, who was, like, 36. You know, they pulled a 1 ERA out of – yeah, he had been DFA'd before. They pulled, like, a 1 ERA out of a couple of other guys, too. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they throw out there. They're going to play well, you know, unless it's Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn's the only guy who can't figure it out in terms of the Dodgers. But, you know, this lineup is disgusting. With Ohtani, it's, I got no words, man. I'll turn it back to Damian, or give Matt a little bit of run, but, like, there's not much that needs to be said. This is the best team in baseball, in my opinion. Sorry, Matt, Braves are close, but this team is just got something else than everybody else that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, I got some comments.
That's $1 billion, but
first, first, why on Fangraphs is Brusdar Graterol listed as AAA?
Because he's not in Korea right now.
Oh, okay.
He was not going to be ready for Korea's opening series. He does plan to be ready for the one against the Cardinals,
right?
But he's not on the 31-man travel roster to Korea.
Yeah, okay, that explains it. I was just curious. I was looking for him at the bullpen here, and I was like, where is Brusdar Graterol? But yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think this team is very, obviously very good. They're the favorite in this division. I think the real question about them is, are they the best team in baseball? I mean, and, you know, I think it's a little bit of preference type thing.
You prefer the Braves?
There's a lot more question marks about the Dodgers than there are the Braves. There really are. I mean, because you've got Mookie Betts playing shortstop. We don't know how that's going to go. Gavin Lux still has looked bad at second base with the yips, and we'll see if he figures that out. You know, I think that you've got, you know, the lineup depth maybe isn't quite – I mean, Teoscar Hernandez and Jason Hayward out there, we'll see how they do this year. They had, you know, Teoscar Hernandez had a down year last year. Jason Hayward had a rebound year last year. Shohei Ohtani is awesome. Obviously, he's going to be awesome. It'll be very interesting to see if he plays the field some. There's been some talk about that, and that could be something where they might give him a little bit of run there to see if, as long as it coincides with his arm throwing program and everything, to where that, you know, if something does happen with his ability to pitch because of the injuries he's had, you know, that could be a way to, you know, he could translate really well to the outfield if he's not able to pitch anymore. So give him a little bit of run just to see what he could do out there. It could be a long-term, you know, something to look at long-term eventually. But, you know, in the rotation, there's injury concerns with it because Tyler Glasnow is a ticking time bomb. a lot of times. I hope he has a great, healthy year, and it's possible he does. You know, it'll be interesting to see if Yoshinobu Yamamoto translates perfectly. A lot of guys that come in from Japan don't translate immediately. We'll see if he's able to. You know, I was listening to something the other day where I think it was maybe Todd Frazier was talking about him, talking about how a lot of times the guys that come over in their first year that come over from these Asian leagues, whether it's Korea or Japan, they struggle with their fastball a little bit and throwing it for strikes and throwing it enough. And Yoshinobu Yamamoto's got these elite breaking balls, but you know, his fast, we'll see how hard he gets hit in the big leagues. He might have to adjust. There might be an adjustment period. And then, you know, there are other guys like Gavin Stone. You mentioned Sheehan. Walker Buehler can kind of be lumped in there too as a guy who's coming off of Tommy John surgery. You're not sure what you're going to get from them. You feel like you've got enough of them that something's going to hit with them, but
James Paxton. You know,
James Paxton's another guy, but there's a lot of injury concern with the rotation. I mean, there really is. There's still a lot of injury risk there. Kershaw obviously will hopefully come back in the second half of the season as well. And the good thing about that is that this team it's not like the Rangers who have all these pitchers coming back in the second half, but they might not be good enough to hold their head above water without them. This team's good enough to hold their head above water without the, you know, Kershaw, and if Walker Buehler takes some time, and you know, as long as those guys come back strong second part of the season, that they should be, you know, it'll work out for them. So it's an interesting team. You know, I probably would take the Braves over them. I think the projection systems are in line with that. But I mean, this team is obviously, I mean, to me, it's 1A and 1B, best teams in baseball. You know, this team is really, 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 really good. And I think that they're going to have a good season. I mean, I don't see anybody really challenging them in the division.
Yeah, I mean, you could flip a coin between the two teams. I don't think anyone would, you know, be upset at that if you had the Dodgers 1 and the Braves 2 or the Braves 1, Dodgers 2. They're the class of the National League. I mean, they are the two teams that everyone is gunning for. They're the two best teams potentially in baseball. Like, it's going to be fascinating to see that race for the number one spot there, in just the National League in general, but baseball in general with them. It is going to be interesting to see what they do with some of these guys. You know, is Ohtani going to play the field? That's an interesting one, because even Dave Roberts reiterated that again today, saying that Ohtani, which this one I thought was kind of wild, he's going to start his throwing program when they get back to the United States in like 3 days, 4 days. He had an elbow surgery in like September, and he's going to start his throwing program already.
That dude is a freak.
It's insane. What's that? What's Glasnow? I mean, you know, he's been preaching all offseason, and I'm excited to see what it's like, obviously, as a Dodger fan. But he finally got his elbow fixed, and it didn't look like it was a problem last year. That all his injuries were not elbow related. It was, you know, an oblique injury, really. So can he stay healthy? What's that going to look like? What's year two of Bobby Miller going to look like there? You know, is the revival of Jason Hayward going to be real? Like, is that going to sustain? That's a question mark too. Gavin Lux, his bat has looked fantastic. Like, Lux's bat has looked insane. The defense is not good though. So it's going to be a fun team. I mean, this team's going to score a lot. They're going to limit a lot. They're going to win the division. But there is some question marks still to be had. And maybe that's just me being a pessimistic Dodger fan. But I think there's still a little bit of question marks, even in an offseason where they spent over $1 billion.
You also got just what other Max Muncy. Is he going to be Max Muncy of 2022 or 2023? Like, he was still fine last year, but he's not. I don't think he's quite the same, you know. Or the 2021 Max Muncy was the year he was an MVP candidate up till the end. But the last couple of years, he's just been fine. So that's another one.
It was ever in Torrey until he tore his elbow up.
Like, MVP type season from him.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and you know, he hadn't been the same since then. So, I mean, we'll see.
So. Yeah, and I love the Teoscar Hernandez signing, right? I think getting that guy out of Seattle, right, where I talked about it with Eugenio Suarez, I just think he didn't translate well to Seattle, didn't hit well there, didn't feel right there. I think Teoscar coming to the Dodgers, getting the Dodgers, you know, game plan programs and all that, that's such a huge bonus to a guy who already hits the ball so hard. We saw with JD Martinez last year, moves over, you know, and all of a sudden hits 30-something home runs. So I think the sky's the limit for a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, especially because he's going to be getting the play, you know, the pitches with guys on base in front of him. Him and Muncy, Will Smith, some of those guys, they're going to be getting a lot of opportunities because pitchers have to work around those guys in the front.
The weird thing about Teoscar Hernandez to me is that he's the most not un-Dodger like player out there. Like, he never walks and he strikes out an absolute ton. And when you think of the Dodgers hitters, they are guys who have elite plate discipline, and they have been for a long time. They're guys who work deep counts and just put so much pressure on pitchers. And it's just interesting to me that, you know, they brought in Teoscar Hernandez, who's like just a pure like slugger type guy. You know, it's just weird to me. I mean, it might work out. I think his profile that you're looking at is maybe similar to what JD Martinez was last year.
The whole but reason he plays they a brought little
bit of okay but defense. But.
The whole reason they brought Teoscar in is because he crushes lefties and their lineup has like six lefties.
Yeah.
That's why they brought him in.
Yeah.
So, Anyways, that will wrap up this episode of the Batfoot Podcast. Unless you guys got anything else you want to tune in on real quick. Nope. All righty.
I think so.
Good. All right. Well, opening day is in 2 days in Korea. I'll be up at 3 a.m. watching them. I hope you guys will join. It'll be fun. But next week, we will have our predictions episode going over every division and doing our awards and everything. It'll be a super long episode, so be sure to tune in for that one. And we will catch you guys back next week.